Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit AudiblePodcast.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 88, March 6th, 2013. Ham Radio featured on Tim Allen's Last Man Standing. Hello, everybody. This is K9 EID, and we're coming to you tonight from Pleasant Hope, Missouri, in the Springfield, Missouri area. And it's Ham Nation time, program number 88. Can you think about that? 88 programs. Very honored tonight to have John Amadeo with us. He's the producer of Last Man Standing, and we'll get into John's news in just a few minutes. But first of all, let's see what's going on with Gordo and Julian. How are you guys doing in Costa Mesa?
We are fine. In fact, if we're 88, just think, 12 more shows, and it's going to be Dayton time. And, you know, they've given us, Bob, an hour and a half for Ham Nation on the air at a Dayton forum. So we're looking forward to Dayton.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. We're going to be doing a lot of different things there. We'll keep you posted as time comes on. And I'd like to know how many of you are going to Dayton, because we're going to be manning booths and all other kinds of things. But we're very excited about it. Just happened that our 100th show will be right at the Dayton time. So all kinds of things going to happen. And the special event station, Mike and Al and all the guys, Lynn, they've all come together and got a special event call from the FCC for Ham Nation special event at Dayton. So we'll keep you posted, because you'll be able to, if you don't make Dayton, you'll be able to talk to that special event station on the air. So we're excited about all that. And I wanted, before we get started, I want to just do a little quick thing here with some of my friends from Springfield. They did a very cool thing at the large mall here. This mall is major. There are just thousands of people each Saturday coming through here from all states around. And they got together with all the major television stations. The meteorologists from the stations were all there. And we had, of course, the storm chasers that go out there and run around in their cars. But Ham Radio was at the center of this whole thing. Here's a couple of pictures of some of those. This is right in the mall, and so they were just getting set up. And you can see the vests they have. We'll see it here in just a minute. Bill KZ0CTF and Joy N0OCF here with Sarah and I. And they answered all kinds of questions and were on the air showing the public what ham radio does. And I like how you like that, Gordo. It publicizes who they are. I love it when they're out in the field. And they got together with the KY3, which is the NBC affiliate here. Their meteorologists were on hand. It was just a big time that weekend for ham radio in the Ozarks. And then the really neat thing was to find the Southwest Missouri ARC was there. And Patty, she runs this whole thing. God bless her. She really keeps it going. She's KD0AEL, and you can see her there with us and some of the members. So we had a little fun doing that, and I just wanted to give them a little acknowledgement, because they worked really hard for that. And so we're happy to be there and been able to catch them. And you had some activity out on the coast, Gordo. What's going on there for us?
We always have activity. In fact, lately we've been testing some transceivers for CQ magazine. We got that new 50-watt Wushan. I know that's not the way that you say it, but we've got that radio. Fairly complicated to program from the front panel, even the built-in mic. And, you know, that's what we've discovered about many of the radios coming in from China, and that is they're terrific radios. They're built very well, but the problem is they need to be computer programmed. And for emergency comms, if you're out in the field and they have you switch to a frequency that you don't have in the memory, you're up a creek. So that's one of the things that we remind those of you that work with other brand new hams. If they have one of the new Chinese radios, help them get it pre-programmed. And Rod and Karen have done such a great job with pre-programming radios with all their software that RT Systems is just one of the best for cables. Well, let's take a look again at all that's happening with Phil Parton in for DRO as he was traveling around, this time at ham radio outlet Sunnyvale with his new Kenwood TS-990. And you know, Phil Parton, as well as Ray at ICOM and Dennis at Yaesu and Raj at Alinco, they make the rounds. And that's why we really support these four manufacturers. There's Phil opening up that big, heavy 54-pound transceiver. And this is for the big showing. And it was heavy. The store managers are looking on to make sure he doesn't drop that big radio. And, yeah, it is a little expensive. But, boy, they got it on the air, and they had a terrific time working stations all over the West Coast on 40 meters, then all over the country on 20 meters. And, again, there's a full shot of that TS-990. And this photos came from WA6UHA, one of our California Rescue members. So Phil Parton, much like Ray and Dennis and Raj of the other companies, is a one-man show, just like Ray is and Dennis and Raj. They don't have a huge group of sales managers that go around, but he does it himself, just like Ray, Dennis, and Raj. And he knows all about all of the different buttons to push and so on. During that get-together, they had hams coming in and operating it and giving good ideas to Phil. Look at that retro display. I love that, like a shortwave receiver display in the old days, Bob. And for RTTY, you could tune it right in, and it does read RTTY as well as PSK31. And that vector scope was really fun to watch. And Phil takes notes, and if people have suggestions, he takes those notes and he gets them to the folks in Japan. So each of these sales managers, the Phils, the Rays, the Dennis, and the Rogers, when you meet them at a ham store, give them a round of applause because they're out there doing their thing nearly single-handedly. And that's our California Rescue crew giving the radio a good tryout to see how well it's working. So it's a fun day when we see new radios coming on. And again, these big manufacturers, Kenwood, Yaesu, ICOM, and Alinco, just one or two people that are running the ham division. So give them a good shake of the hand and tell them they're doing a great job because they're making ham radio happen. Well, making ham radio happen is Julian, and Julian's going to tune us in just a moment and tell us all about ham radio that's coming to the big screen. So, Julian, if you'll take over, I'm going to back out, and here he is, N3 JF Julian.
Yeah, this is probably the most awkward transition ever done on television, but here we are, and I am N3 JF Julian, and I was lucky enough that our friend John Amodeo from Last Man Standing, the comedy show starring Tim Allen, invited me to up to the studios to help him out with some of the technical aspects for an upcoming episode, episode 217. This could be shown on ABC in March 15th, so not this Friday, but Friday afterwards. And let's go ahead and run the show, run the video. We have some behind-the-scenes footage of what's going to happen on that show.
In Season 1, you may have seen Tim Allen as Mike Baxter, KA0XTT, using his ICOM IC9100 and his HT on the old set. In In season 2, a new set was used, complete with a shiny new radio, the Icom 7600, an attached Heil PR781 microphone, and also an IC2820 D-Star radio. Now, in episode 217, we see for the first time Mike Baxter's brand new basement ham shack. His new shack was inspired by longtime ham radio operator and producer of Last Man Standing, John Amadeo, NN6JA, and it has all new gear. You can see Mike's new Icom 7700, his IC9100, an antenna rotator beaming towards Brazil, and the Heil Finn microphone. The ham shack and this entire set was built for this one episode. Mike is a collector of antique Heathkit radios and old microphones, and you can see them dotted around his house. Mike is an extra class ham, and it appears he got some help in his last upgrade from our very own Gordon West, WB6NOA. An avid CW fan, Mike uses this Ameritron ALS-5000 for more power. Don't look for this model for sale. This one is special. It goes up to 11. Like every ham, he collects and displays QSL cards from those he contacts around the world. Peter Varunis, NL7XM, cleared all the call signs used in the show. On a TV set, not all is what it seems. Let's take a quick walk through this new ham shack and see where the basement steps take us. Nowhere. Another new set built just for this episode is Boyd's school classroom. And right next to it, yet another set built just for this episode, a tribal hut. I can't tell you much about what happens here, but other than that huge machete, you will see a Yaesu FT-817 being used. Tuesday night is filming night, and there's room for 225 audience members. Lots of equipment is stored temporarily behind the audience seating place. And just above is the booth. Inside the booth is an Icom IC7200. This radio is never seen on the show, but it plays a very important part. Ham radio is the world's biggest party line, and you never know who may be listening in. With Mike's office getting a final cleaning, and all of the lighting tools back on the cart, one of the boom microphone units gets wheeled into position, and my dream camera, plus three of its buddies, are brought onto the set, which starts to look more like the deck of an aircraft carrier. And the real technical wizards start to do their magic. There's Laura King, K6MIX, controlling all of the boom and stage mics. Tim Clark, switching all of the video feeds from four different cameras. And John Hart, the sound recordist. Without these amazing people and nearly 200 other like them, this show would never make it onto the air. I'm Julian Frost, N3JF, and this has been Behind the Scenes at Last Man Standing, episode 217, The Fight.
All right. And as you can tell, during the making of that behind the scenes video, I wasn't actually allowed to tell you a whole lot because none of the plot lines or storylines or any information have been released to the public yet. But thankfully it has. And this is a copy of the script, which you'll never see anywhere else other than here. And maybe our next guest will be able to help us out. And here he is, John Amadeo. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Well, I'm not telling anybody anything. So you're out of luck there. But let me just say for you, for the editor, for your show's editor, I'm about watching this on a separate screen, which is about a 2-second delay. So I will shut that down and avoid the parallax. So I'm actually looking at the camera.
Okay, so we can play all kinds of fun stuff with you.
Yeah, that's I don't know, something. I have a lovely frozen picture of Bob on my computer, and you know, there could be nothing better to look at during this segment. But first of all, let me say, Julian, thank you. That's a great video. You're really an accomplished filmmaker and editor, and I couldn't appreciate it more. There's no one I'd rather have on my set than you to help me, first of all, make all this crazy ham radio gear work, and also to document it and show it to the rest of the world. And also I want to thank Gordon, because I know Gordon provided some really important tech support to us when we had some problems making all these incredible high-powered radios work 25 to 50 feet away from each other. That's no easy task. So thanks a lot to both of you guys.
It does sound like something that should be very easy, but as we found out, absolutely is not. So we do thank Gordo, who's sitting right over here. And thanks for your thanks. The check definitely is in the mail.
Well, you know, it's like we want our ham radios to be able to communicate with people all the way around the world. And when you put them in a room together, not too far away from one another, they're not very happy to be there. So it took a lot of work, and we can talk about that later. But thanks a lot for doing that. And boy, you know, we had a lot of fun with this episode, as I'm sure your viewers will find out as we talk tonight.
Absolutely. And
can I change the Chiron while we're talking?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. AMODEO.
There we go.
AMODEO. Thank you.
All right. Well, John, let's talk about Last Man Standing, because, I mean, it is a show where one of the main characters is a ham radio operator. So can you tell me, how does one start the whole script process going? What's involved, and how does it change over time?
Well, you know, so any script, and that really could be a television show, a movie, I suppose it could be a play or a book even for that matter, starts with an idea. It's an idea that a writer has. And a writer, in our case, will take his idea to our executive producer, who's our showrunner, and discuss the idea to see if it's really suitable for our show, for our characters, for our audience, and then develop it, if it's approved, into a story. And then a story gets written, and that story gets shown to our studio and our network. In the studio case for us is 20th Century Fox, and our network, as you the viewers may know, is ABC Television. And if that story is approved, it gets written into a script. We've been lucky enough to do 18 of those this year. In fact, we did 24 of them last year, and we hope to do more of them next year.
And from the time that the script is written, it obviously gets given to the actors. And what's the process? Do they just immediately start reading the script and acting out the lines, or is there some kind of review process that goes on prior to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, our process is we have about a week-long production process, which starts on a Wednesday. So we'll generally get our scripts, if we're lucky, on the show night for us, which is Tuesday. So we'll be shooting our shows on Tuesday. Sometime on Tuesday, we'll get the script for the next week's episode. On Wednesday morning, we'll do what's called a table read in the business, where the actors read that script in front of the studio, the network, and the writers, so that the writers can revise it throughout the week. And then throughout the week, we have a series of run-throughs where the actors will perform the script in a rough form for us. And then the studio and the network has the opportunity to give us notes on the process of the script. And the writers have the opportunity to go and rewrite that script to make it better, make it funnier. So the ultimate goal being Monday morning for us to shoot all of our pre-shoot material, pre-shoot meaning the things that we don't need our live audience for, oftentimes special effects or stunts or things that require computer-generated animation. And we shoot all that, get it in the can, as they say. And then on Tuesday night, we shoot our audience show in front of, as you showed us in the video, about 200, 225 live audience members. So just to dispel a rumor, not canned laughter, 200 and something people laughing their heads off at our show. That's basically the process.
Very cool. And I know you've been pushing, as the producer, you've been pushing really hard to try and get ham radio in front of the cameras. How hard is that to do, and what kind of influence do you have to push your ideas forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a producer, we're not writers, so we don't write the show. We don't have the power, if you want to call it that, to tell the writers what they should be writing. I think what we do have is the ability to influence them, and I think this is a great example of how that can work. In my case, we built this really incredible working amateur radio station really more than a year ago, 2 years ago, I think. And the writers saw it, and they didn't really know what to do with it for quite a long time. But over the course of the two seasons, they started to see what it was and how it worked and see some of our special events that we've held on the stage. And eventually, one of the writers came forward and said, I have a story idea for a ham radio story. And of course, that's what we were hoping for all along. So that's how we influence the writers to do it. And that's what's led us to episode 217, The Fight, which airs next Friday night.
Very cool. And Brian, if you can pull up the first photo, it should be one of Molly Ephraim, who plays Mandy. Mandy Baxter, the daughter of Tim Allen in the character. And here you can see she's in the brand new set that we showed on the video. John, maybe you can tell us a little bit about that set again.
Sure. Well, you're right in pointing out that this is a new set. The viewers have always seen Mike Baxter's work radio station in his office. And of course, don't we all have a little radio station in our office? And Mike has a pretty cool one. However, we always knew, well, where does Mike really go on the radio? He's not going to be able to go on the radio at work too much, so he must have a home ham radio station. And we had already established a basement set for the Baxter household. It was a bomb shelter episode. So we figured, well, right outside the bomb shelter, there's a little radio station. We built this set, which basically abuts the bomb shelter, and we populated it with some pretty amazing ham radio gear from many of the manufacturers that have been kind to our show over the past two seasons.
Very cool. And if we can go to the third picture, which should be of Ed, who is Ed Alzate in the show, played by Hector Elizondo. And he's a very, very famous actor, as many of the viewers will see. And I notice he's also using a radio. And where is he? What's he doing?
Well, you know, I'm here. Here's where I'm torn, because I will tell you that Hector... Hector's character Ed in the show has a call sign. He's a licensed amateur radio operator, and he does identify with a slash Papa Yankee 8. So for you you HFers, you'll know pretty much where Hector is. It's a funny storyline. I don't want to reveal everything about it just yet. You'll have to watch it next week. But if you know what Papa Yankee 8 means to all of us, then you'll know where Hector's sitting right now.
Yeah, and it was having been there during the 4 days that we worked on this, it was interesting to see how that that set changed. But the final result is pretty awesome. So the final picture we have is of Kyle, who's played by Christoph Sanders. And I believe that is the picture of the original set for the – well, actually, it's the second set, but in the Outdoor Man office. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, the TV sets, I think you experienced it, but I'll try to explain it to the viewers. TV sets are very elastic. They have to be what we need them to be on a week-by-week basis. If we need Mike's office and Ed's office for a week, we'll build them. And the very next week, we might need more space. So you might come into our stage the next day and find that an entire baseball stadium is gone, or an entire – or Ed's office is gone. So things move around very quickly. Mike's office actually used to be in another location, and it was, in fact, exactly the mirror image of the set that you see now. But this is Mike's newest set, if you will. It looks very much like the old one. It's just a mirror image. And in this episode, Kyle happens to hear a call on the radio, and Kyle, in our show, his character is also a licensed amateur radio operator. So he's able to go into Mike's office and jump on the radio and answer that call.
And all the radio equipment is live. I mean, we've seen that before. We've actually had special event stations from the studio themselves. So, and we've seen ham radio portrayed in film and TV. I mean, it was in Contact. There's a new show out right now which showed some ham radio being used in a very strange way to contact Russia on 2 meters from I think it was Washington, D.C. But it was pretty good. It wasn't even connected to the radio. So if we've seen all these shows where they've used ham radio before, why is it that you're showing ham radio now but going through so many hoops to actually show it really happening? These actors are actually using ham radio. They're pressing the mics. They're doing everything. So why did you come to that decision instead of just faking it?
Well, that's a two-part question, and I'll tell you, the part one is as a ham radio operator and as a filmmaker, I wanted this stuff to be real. I think nothing makes us crazier, no matter what your hobby is, than seeing something that's been faked and badly faked, you know? So when you see our radio equipment, it's real. And the way we prove that to our audience and to the naysayers is that we use it. We use it all the time. I've got a lot of licensed amateur radio operators on the set. At the end of a rehearsal day, everybody goes home, and sometimes we'll jump on the radio and make some contacts. We've had a number of radio events, everything from local UHF radio stations all the way into national HF calls. We've had the K6H Hollywood Celebrates Ham Radio event at the stage. And we just like the fact that it's real. It's, you know, it, all the equipment's real. There's just no reason why any real ham operator would not plug it into the wall, plug it into an antenna, and get on it. So we do that. Now, the second part of that is that Mr. Allen, who's our star and our leader, likes things to be real. You know, as an actor, it's easier to walk into a set that has some element of realism to it and perform your character in that set. So it's nicer that everything in the set is real. You can turn it on, you can tune it, you can hear what's happening on it. You know, oftentimes when we're shooting the show, I have the gear on and I'll tune it to a particular frequency. And if you're an astute viewer of the show, you'll see the meter's moving. We're receiving live HF signals while we're shooting the show. You know, who knows? It may be you calling in the background while the show is shooting. You never know. But it just pleases us, and it presents a better climate for our cast to perform in a real-world setting rather than a fake setting. Now, let me go on to say one other thing. Yes, we wanted this to be real, but of course we were very careful, as you know very well because you were there, that no FCC regulations be violated. So although the cast got to press the microphone buttons and got to key the radios, we were running into dummy loads, and the power was turned down incredibly all the way down, so that no rules were broken. We were not transmitting RF. There were no unlicensed cast members broadcasting on 20 meters in this case. So we were able to make it look incredibly real. When you press a mic, you will see meters move. You'll see transmit lights go on. But no one was actually transmitting in a way that would violate an FCC regulation. So I hope that answers your question.
Excellent. Yeah, indeed. In fact, we actually had one licensed ham driving around the parking lot trying to listen in to see if any signal was sneaking out. But the good thing about studios is it's made so it's almost like a Faraday cage. Nothing gets in, nothing gets out, because, you know, they do use radio mics on stage, and that would be terrible if somebody's transmissions came in. So it works both ways. All right, John. Well, look, time is running out because we did start a little bit late today. But there were a number of hams or actors who were portraying hams during the show. And I think let's run through the radio equipment we had on set all at one time and all operating. We had the ICOM 9100. We had the Yaesu 817. We had a 7200 up in the booth. We had another 817 up in the PERMS, which is where all the lights and stuff are located. We had a ICOM 7600 in Mike Baxter's office. We had an ICOM 7800 in the new shack. So that's what, five radios, John? Is that about right?
Yeah, that's a lot of ham radio equipment to hook up in a couple of short days and make it all run. You know, we also had, you showed it in the video, and it's just really funny that Ameritron, they did such a wonderful thing for us. You know, it's the Tim Allen, if you will, heritage of home improvement that Tim and Tim Taylor always wants more power. So we asked if Ameritron could make us an ALS 5000, and of course they did. So, you know, who doesn't need 5000 watts? So you want to bust through a pileup. There you go. So, and then, you know, the Green Heron people helped us, and I'm just, you know, looking at a crib note, but you know, of course, Comet and Daiwa have always been good to our show, as have MJF and, oh, I'm sorry, MFJ. I always get that wrong. And, you know, clearly ICOM is a big participant in our show, as is Yaesu. And we owe them both a debt of gratitude. We're a TV sitcom. We don't have a budget for amateur radio equipment. And clearly from your video and anyone that watches the show, we have a lot of gear. And we get that stuff as on loan. We use it all year. We use it hard. We use it for real. And then we send it back. Unfortunately, we just sent it back. And not to mention, I can't possibly leave out the Heil Microphone Company, because there's a lot of Heil mics on the set. And boy, do they sound good, and they look good on camera. And they really thanks do. To everybody that helped.
They really do. John, I want to say thank you very much. And we're gonna kill it from there. And we look forward to seeing the show, not this Friday, but next Friday, the 15th of March. Thank you so much. Had a great time up there. And ever you need a English voiceover, I'm your guy.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, John, I wanted to say thank you very, very much, because we appreciate you coming on. I know it's real, real hard for you to get on here at this hour of the day, but I had to bring my fin on so I could at least be up with you guys on the show. What the heck? Very, very good. But all of us, every amateur radio operator in the country, thanks you for putting ham radio in a nice light. And it's going to be really good. The show is going to be great for ham radio. And we owe all of that to you, John. And I appreciate it. And hopefully someday we'll get to see more on television, and you will be the nucleus of all of that. So thanks for doing that. And again, I want you to tell the audience also, some people might not have heard about the show much. How many viewers do you have? Where are you running in the numbers right now?
We're doing extremely well right now. We have a solid 7 million plus viewers. And quite frankly, on a Friday night, that's a very big number. It's been compared to we premiered originally on a Tuesday night, which is a tough night, but boy, on a Friday to get 7 million viewers, it's a good thing. So we feel very secure, and we're fingers crossed for season 3. So let's see what happens.
Well, you've got two more. Sarah never misses it. She's got 3 DVR set up, so she doesn't miss it. So you got a couple of fans there, and I know there's just thousands of hams going to be watching. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll have you back on again and see what all of the repercussions are. Maybe next year they'll do more, but thanks very much to all. We appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon. Have a great rest of your show.
All right. Julian, I want to tell you while we're here on the show how much I appreciated you doing that. You are terrific, as you heard from John. Just a great, great job. And you spent a lot of time there. So thanks very much for doing that. I just hope we don't lose you. One of these days you're going to say, well, see you guys. I'm at CBS or ABC or NBC or whatever. Great job.
Well, thanks very much. And, you know, I'm a pretty good multitasker. So if I can get up there and do down here, I'll do both. But this is home, right?
Okay. Well, you can probably always get a meal. Susie's got a stove back there cooking. So, oh, that's absolutely fabulous. So nice of you to do all the video. And I know you guys spend a lot of time there and getting all the rigs set up. And people don't realize what goes on behind the scenes, but they got to see just a little piece of it. So there we are. And I want everybody to call your friends and go watch that show. It's really good to spread the word of ham radio. We want to move down to Louisiana, because I think Don has a couple of words for us about ICOM.
I do. Hello, everyone. And yeah, those Heil mics not only sound great and look great on set, they also look pretty good in ink as well. So there you go.
Look at this.
nice to see John and have John on the show. I met John at Dayton last year. And John, if you need another voiceover guy, I may know someone. Hey, if you want to take a high-performing HF rig or a solid 2-meter mobile on your next trip, away from home, like Hector Elizondo's actor did, and he went to the remote location. Or you want to tap into D-Star from the palm of your hand, en route, on location, on the go, in your home, ICOM will help you do anything you want to do with ham radio, at home or on the road. HF, VHF, UHF, no matter, it's covered. Go to icomamerica.com/HF-VHF-UHF, and you can see what we're talking about. And I think we're going to put that on screen right now. We've talked about the 7000. Love the ICOM 7000. We have also talked about the 9100. Let's not forget the 7410 and the 7200. Both of these have ICOM's signature DSP technology. That is digital signal processing. It will change the way you listen to ham radio. Now, the ICOM 7410 is an all-mode VHF transceiver. It has double conversion, super heterodyne system, a built-in automatic antenna tuner, built-in 15 kilohertz first IF filter, and optional 3 kilohertz and 6 kilohertz filters. And this is a great radio for your home station. If you want something a little more rugged to take out in the road, a little more water resistance perhaps, the ICOM 7200. This is a solid performing radio. Digital flexibility. This also has selectable filters. The width and the shape is selectable. Excellent receiver performance. It's compact and rugged. Has a water-resistant front panel. This is the radio that is in the Boy Scout kit that ICOM sends out for JADA. The 7200. Great, great radio. You will not go wrong with either of these. For a home station, the 7400 is perfect. If you want to take something out on the road, 7200. These are both HF 6-meter radios, and they will get you on the air and make you some serious contacts. You cannot go wrong with either of these radios. Great, great, great stuff. Now, make sure you visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. There's a lot more info on ICOM's line of VHF, HF, UHF, D-Star. It's all there. You can also enter the ICOM weekly drawing for ICOM swag, like T-shirts and hats. I saw someone in the Ham Nation chat room a few minutes ago said they got an email, said that they were one of the swag winners. You could be there, too. Learn how to win the monthly grand prize drawing for a free ICOM radio. It's icomamerica.com/hamnation for official rules. Check out all of ICOM's previous drawing winners. Sign up and good luck. And thank you very much to ICOM for being part of Ham Nation. And I believe if George, is George around? Because we have information on the ICOM contest. George, are you around?
I am around, Don. And yes, I do have some information on the contest there. As you said, you know, you can enter after each episode of Ham Nation for the weekly swag contest. But when you enter, you're also eligible to win the grand prize radio for each month. Last month, we gave away the ID31A, and the lucky winner was Bob C, KJ6SVX. And for the March grand prize, we're going to have the powerful, smaller, and simple-to-use IC2300H 2-meter mobile with 65 watts output. The IC2300H is built tough. It passes the mil standard 810G specifications, including shock, vibration, and temperature tests. Make the IC2300H your rig for rugged mobile operation, and be sure after the show today and each week to go register at icomamerica.com/hamnation. Bob?
Don, I appreciate you doing that very much. You might get another job, as we heard there. If they're looking for voiceovers, you might apply.
I'm available, and I work cheap.
I hear you. George, nice to see you tonight, and I hope that everything's going well for you. I understand you've got more stuff going on in your contests also, but we'll get to that after we hear you and see you fire up some smoke tonight. So what's happening in the old workshop, George? What kind of smoke you got going?
Well, Bob, I just had the soldering iron on a minute ago. I was making some little jumpers in here, and we'll cover my segment here in just a minute on what I did this week, but I think Don has some news for us, doesn't he?
We're going to do that. I just wanted to make sure you had it cooking. That's all. You got to get it cooking.
It's on.
Okay, cool. All right.
Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1,855. These are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 6, 2013. The United Kingdom's first CubeSat, Strand 1, was launched Monday, February 25th.
Strand stands for Surrey Training Research and Nanosatellite Demonstration. Strand 1 was built in only 3 months using a Google Nexus 1 smartphone with the Android operating system. Strand 1 carries an amateur radio AX25 packet radio downlink on 437.568 MHz. It also uses a 9K 6 bits per second frequency shift keying in a high-level data control frame and non-return-to-zero inverted encoding. The overall Strand program is intended to be a long-term arrangement between the space company SSTL and the academic researchers at the Surrey Space Center. Strand 1 is the first in a long line of Strand smartphone-based nanosatellites. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WI6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
The Strand 1 team has asked if radio amateurs can assist in collecting telemetry from around the world to help them determine the health and attitude of the spacecraft. Information on how to receive the satellite's telemetry data is available on the Strand 1 page at amsat-uk.org. Reports go by email to Dr. Chris Bridges at c.p.bridges@surrey.ac.uk. The ARRL reports that Veracode, developed by Peter Martinez, G3PLX, has been adopted as an International Telecommunications Union recommendation. On Tuesday, February 19th, the ITU announced the simultaneous adoption and approval of the recommendation entitled Telegraphic Alphabet for Data Communications by Phase Shift Keying at 31 Baud in the amateur and amateur satellite services. This digital mode alphabet is commonly called Varicode because the more frequently used characters in the English language occupy fewer bits. It was developed by G3PLX in the 1990s. For his effort, Martinez was awarded the ARRL Technical Innovation Award for the year 2000 for his development of PSK31, which uses Varicode for transmission efficiency. The ARRL reports the American Red Cross will be phasing out its Emergency Communications Response Vehicles, or ECRVs. According to American Red Cross Disaster Services Technology Manager Keith Robertory, KG4UIR, every communication capability of the Emergency Communication Response Vehicles already exists, or will soon exist as a rapidly deployable kit. These can be loaded on any vehicle that is owned or rented by the American Red Cross, providing more flexibility in shaping its response to match the disaster. Robert Troy told the ARRL that retrofitting the decade-old vehicles with new equipment is not a good use of donated funds, as the long-term strategy is to move to more portable systems. This, says KG4UIR, is consistent with the trends in the telecommunication and technology industries. As to the ham radio gear currently installed in these vehicles, it's not going away. It'll be removed and will either become part of the deployable inventory or provided to the local American Red Cross chapter to build local capacity. Hams around the world are mourning the death of Pat Hawker, G3VA, who for 50 years wrote the technical topics column in the RSGB publication Radcom. He passed away February 21st at age 90. Hawker was first awarded a UK artificial aerial license and call sign 2BUH in 1936. He received his transmitting license and the call G3VA in 1938. During his lifetime, Pat Hawker was involved in many aspects of radio. This ranged from World War II with the United Kingdom's military intelligence organizations through to his time working for the RSGB, then as the editor of Electronics Weekly and the Royal Television Society Journal. The extraordinary career of Pat Hawker, G3VA, is described in a book by Steve White, G3ZVW, titled A Bit of Controversy, Pat Hawker, A Radio Life. And if you didn't know, Pat Hawker also held the title MBE, which stands for Member of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. And finally this week, scientists from Columbia believe they've pinpointed the origin of the giant meteor that smashed into a remote region of Russia last month. Using some of the dozens, if not hundreds, of videos that captured the once-in-a-century event, the scientists have calculated the Chelyabinsk meteor's trajectory, tracing it back to a group of Earth-crossing objects known as Apollo asteroids. Researchers Jorge Zuliaga and Ignacio Ferran from the University of Antioquia then used trigonometry to calculate the height, speed, and position of the rock as it fell to Earth. To reconstruct the meteor's original orbit around the Sun, they used six different properties of its trajectory through Earth's atmosphere. They then plugged all of that data into specialized astronomy software developed by the U.S. Naval Observatory. The computers then confirmed that it was from the Apollo group. Unlike the more stable objects in the asteroid belt, which lies between Mars and Jupiter, Apollo asteroids tend to sideswipe Earth's orbit, posing a risk of collision like the one in Russia. According to the International Astronomical Union's Minor Planet Center, more than 4,800 Apollo asteroid close approaches have been identified to date. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. I never, ever, ever tire of watching those asteroid videos and that thing come in. I mean, just absolutely amazing stuff. I'm glad I could put that in the report. Bob, back to you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good stuff. And I agree. That stuff's fascinating. Thanks to Bill Pasternak also to keep Westlink going. So, George, you got it all warmed up. I just wanted to make sure because we hadn't seen you yet tonight with all the activity in the beginning. So, take it away and let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, I did have the soldering iron a while ago. As a matter of fact, no, it's not on now. I've turned it off. But anyway, this week I didn't fire it up for the show. You know, I kind of left you hanging. We talked about inductors last week, but inductors wouldn't be very useful without inductive reactants. So that's what we're going to look at this week.
Last week on Smoke and Solder, we talked about inductors. So this week, we're going to talk about inductive reactants. When an AC voltage is applied across an inductor, the flow of current through it behaves very differently than that of a DC voltage. A sine wave produces a phase difference between the voltage and current waveforms. The opposition to AC current flow through a coil winding not only depends on the inductance of the coil, but also the frequency of the waveform. We could call this opposition AC resistance, but the more common name is impedance. The symbol for impedance is Z. Resistance is always associated with DC circuits, so to distinguish DC resistance from AC resistance, the term reactance is used. Just like resistance, the value of reactance is measured in ohms, but its symbol is X. Both capacitors and inductors have reactance. An inductor's electrical resistance, when used in an AC circuit, is called inductive reactance. Inductive reactance has a symbol of X sub L. In a purely capacitive circuit, the current leads the voltage by 90 degrees. Conversely, in a purely inductive AC circuit, the exact opposite is true. The current lags the applied voltage by 90 degrees. The formula for inductive reactance is X sub L equals 2 times pi times the frequency times the inductance. We can see that if either the frequency or inductance is increased, the overall inductive reactance value would also increase. As the frequency approaches infinity, the inductor's reactance would also be infinity, acting like an open circuit. Conversely, as the frequency approaches zero, or DC, the inductor's reactance would decrease to zero, acting like a short circuit. This means that the inductive reactance is proportional to frequency and is smaller at lower frequencies and larger at higher frequencies. Let's calculate the inductive reactance for an inductor of 100 millihenries and zero resistance across a 120-volt, 60-hertz power supply. We use the formula X sub L equals 2 pi FL, so that's 2 times pi, which is 3.14159, times 60 hertz, times the inductance in henries, so that would be 0.1 henries, and we find that the inductive reactance is equal to 37.7 ohms. We've talked about a purely inductive coil, but all coils have a certain amount of resistance since turns of wire are being used. So a simple coil circuit should be thought of as a resistance in series with an inductance. In an AC circuit that contains both inductance and resistance, the voltage will be the phasor sum of the two component voltages. The current flowing through the coil will still lag the voltage, but by an amount less than 90 degrees, depending upon the value of the voltage across the resistance and the voltage across the inductance. The new phase between the voltage and the current is known as the phase angle of the circuit. This inductor came off an antenna right here. You can see that it's tappable, so you can select in the amount of inductance that you want. Right now, I've got it set for the maximum amount, or I could move the tap on down to this end and get it to where there's almost none, or anywhere in between, just depending on what I was trying to tune with it. Let's take a look at our meter here. This is the MFJ-259B analyzer. It also has several other functions on it. Let's step through here and find inductance. Inductance in microhenries. And you notice we're tuned to 4.238 megahertz there. But we're reading inductance, 1.715 microhenries. And that's 45 ohms of inductive reactance at this frequency. All I've got connected here are the leads. So, you know, just being wire, they have some inductance on their own. You'll notice as I move the wire out there, it changes the inductance a little bit. Let's try making an inductor. We'll just roll up some of the cable here. And you can see as I do that, it definitely has an effect there on the inductance. One thing to keep in mind, the leads and your spacing and all will have an effect on inductance. So let's hook in our inductor here and see what we've got. And this measures almost 24 microhenries there. Let's slide it on down, pick out a different value here. We can see that as we decrease the number of turns that are in there, the inductance is going down. Now, we'll also notice the inductive reactance up here is 637 ohms. As we decrease frequency, we notice that the inductive reactance goes down there as well. The
as frequency goes up, inductive reactance increases. Just measuring the inductor here, we've got 370 ohms of inductive reactance there. Let's put a capacitor in series with it and see what that does. Here's a 0.004 microfarad. We'll just slip it in right here at the test terminal. Brought it down to about 301 ohms. You know, inductors have a positive reactance, and capacitors have a negative. So we can see here that adding the capacitor, its negative reactance is actually subtracting what we would have from the inductor alone. So there you have it, our grand conclusion on inductive reactance. You can see that by using capacitors and inductors, you can create all types of tuned circuits.
So in a few weeks, we're going to be building this kit right here. This is an AM/FM radio kit. You know, we built an AM radio when I went to college. That was part of our course there. And it was a lot of fun. And we built it a stage at a time and tested it as we went along. Well, that's kind of what we're going to do with this. And this comes courtesy of PartsExpress.com. That's Parts-Express.com. It's part number 320-084. And if you'd like to build one of these, and I'd encourage you to, go, there's the link right there on the for the website right now. Go there and get you one of these, because it'll be a few weeks, and I just want to give you a chance now to know that this is coming up so that you can get your kit, and we'll build this together in the future. Well, in our weekly contest, we had a question last week, and that was, what is this? And a lot of people knew what this was. But the one who won is Don Robinson, WA4YYM in Cleveland, Tennessee. And he said, that's a Pi network. That's correct, Don. So we're going to give you this copy of Jerry Busting's Constructing HF Wire Antennas book that you can find at your local ham dealer. And congratulations. Now, I've got another one of those books we're going to give away next week. And if you'd like to win that, we'll just flip over the paper here. Tell me what this is. Just send your answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's winner. And I believe that does it, Bob. So we're going to get the soldering iron going back here again.
Okay. Well, we'll meet up with you later and see what you got cooking. Great, great job. And all of the viewers, you should know that George and Gordo and myself, we're available by Skype to come and visit your club. I've even done a couple of HamFest forums lately. Really cool, because you can have what you just saw from George live, and we interact with you because you set up a mic and a camera, and away we go. So pay attention to that, because I think a lot of clubs need programming today, and this is a simple and an inexpensive way to do it. One thing I want to tell everybody is, you know, something happened last week, or week before. It seems like DirecTV and ABC had a problem. Don't let it worry you. Get it on your iPad. You can bring up ABC on the iPad, all the shows. Sarah's been watching it, watching Last Man Standing on her iPad. So if you can't get ABC from your broadcaster, tell him to forget it. I've got a phone and an iPad or whatever. It works. And away we go. So that's super. Well, we're going to go back out to Petaluma because Leo has a note from Audible. Take her away, Leo.
Hello, Hams. Can I interrupt for just a moment? Because I wanted to tell you about, and they asked me to do this one because I'm such a fan. Audible.com. There's the Windows 8. Oh, you can't. It's too dark. You can't really see it. But the Windows 8 version. Wait, it really is. I got to turn up the screen. The Windows 8 version of Audible, the Metro version. It's so beautiful. In fact, Audible has updated all of their apps now to take advantage of the new screen sizes on phones, and the website's even been updated. They're very modern, very beautiful. Audible is just remarkable. It is the best audiobook store in the world. Gives you an amazing selection of over 100,000 books. Here's just a couple of them I'm just looking at. Here's The Hunger Games, The Hobbit. Wow, that would be a fun one. Fun one to get. Audible.com. It's the place to go to browse around. Just take a look. Fiction, nonfiction, mysteries, thrillers. What kind of book do you like? Now, of course, it's wonderful to read a book, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm still a fan of books. But there are plenty of times you can't, you know, be holding a book. What if you're on an exercise machine, bouncing up and down, driving a car, walking the dog? And that's where Audible is so wonderful. Vacuuming the carpet. I have Audible everywhere I go on my phone, as I said, at the Audible app. I have it going through my Sonos system so I can listen throughout the house. And I'm always got wonderful books to listen to. One of the nice things about Audible, I've been a member since 2000, is every book I've ever bought on Audible is in my library. So I can listen to it again. And I've got a lot of classics. Books are one of those things. Sometimes you just get, I just want to hear it again. Audible.com. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to get you a free book. So, because I know that you want to probably try before you buy, and we love it that Audible sets this up for you. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation, audiblepodcast.com/hamnation, you can sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month account. But the first month is free. Your first book is free. You cancel it any time in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing, but the book is yours no matter what. You get to keep it forever. The real trick is choosing a book. There's so many wonderful books to choose from at audible.com. Browse around Atlas Shrugged. Now, you get Atlas Shrugged, you are getting a lot for your, how long is that? A lot for your dollar or your non-dollar. You can get it free right now if you go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. Choose a book, start listening, and let me know what you think. I think you'll love it. It's my favorite place to go whenever I want to get away from it all. audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. Now, let's get back to the show. Already in progress.
Good deal, Leo. I know you really like that, and so do a whole lot of us hams. We have had a ton of guys tell us how much they love Audible. So that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, I've been playing it. Look at that, boy. You can go see all of the replays on your iPad. So go check it out. And one thing you should do, there's an interesting contest. Gordo, you might know about this. If R&L in Hamilton, Ohio, they have a contest now. They're giving away like 3 radios a month. And all you got to do is just sign in. R&L, the letter R and L. You know about that, Gordo?
Oh, yeah. And they're a favorite dealer among those in the Midwest as well as all over the country. And R&L has always got something going on. So viewers and listeners, R&L Electronics, see what they're going to give away soon.
Yeah, they all you got to do is sign in. That's really a cool deal. And I want to check you out. And so does Gigaparts. They got another contest going. They're giving away a Yaesu radio. So check it out. A lot of these dealers are doing real specials, and you want to take care of that. Well, it's been so much fun, but we still got the best to come here because we're moving upstate of Illinois to join Cheryl, and she's been chatting with the chat room. Cheryl, how you doing? What's going on up there?
Oh, hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. Hi, chat room folks and podcast listeners. I just wanted to get rid of my extra screen here because I've got double audio coming my way. So hang on just a second. I was watching the show. It was so great. All right. That should do it.
You get involved, of course.
Oh, absolutely. I want to watch and see what everybody's doing. So I just wanted to say there was some activity here, Bob, from our people in chat room gang. So I want to move on to that. I know we probably have a little bit of time, not too much, but... First off, it's for George, if he's still there on the air. Hi, George. You did a great show tonight. But they wanted to know, KD8TPI, I'm just going to move right into this from Ron. KD8TPI, he says, what was the website for the radio kit? He always, another person before said, what are some good websites to buy? Some of the many build kits available for ham radio, but mostly what was the website for the radio kit? Can you answer that one? They wanted to know.
Yeah, this comes from parts-express.com, and it's part number 320-084.
Excellent. Oh, good. That's good. And how about some other, are there any other websites for the many different kits that for ham radio that you deal with?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I get some stuff from Jamaco, this one Parts Express. Amateur radio kits, you can just do a search for amateur radio kits and tons of stuff will come up. 5-dash.com, I believe, is where we got the soft rock kits. There's just too many to mention, Cheryl.
I'm sure. Probably if you Google it, you'll probably get a whole bunch of them to come up and so on. But one more question for you, George. Who makes that on-air sign? Brian KE6ZGP asked that, and I don't know if you have a manufacturer or somebody that you could refer to for your on-the-air sign.
Okay, well, this sign right over here behind me, that's not really an on-the-air sign, but that came from jimsengraving.com. Bob and Gordo have them too. I think maybe you've got one of those. But the on-the-air light that I had last week is made by Sandy's, and where you can get that is from Frank at cheapham.com.
Oh, that's good to know. A lot of people like those. And now, Bob, I've got some questions for you. You're not out on this one yet. So first off, Dennis NX0IA, he says, is Sarah getting her ticket or does she already have one?
No, Sarah is the president of Highland. She's a very, very busy lady, and so she really doesn't have the time to do anything right now. So, no, she allows me to do all of the radio stuff here, and she runs the company, takes care of everything back there. So, no, she hasn't been involved in amateur radio, but she certainly supports it and knows an awful lot about what's going on. So we really bless her for all that she's doing for ham radio on the backside, and you always have to have someone behind the scenes making it run. And who better than the lady, right, Cheryl?
Oh, yeah. She does such a fine, fine job for you, too. And, well, thank you for answering that. And, you know, this one person's been asking, this is the second time, 2 weeks running, Claudius, KB1ZBW. Hi, Claudius, and thank you for your question. And he really wanted to find out at one point in time, are you considering manufacturing mics for aviation? He says it gets a bit loud in the cockpit and good comms is a lifesaver. And he just wanted to know if you ever were going to make a microphone or microphone headset for aviation, perhaps one day.
We've looked at it and we're looking closer to it all the time because it's kind of going along with a couple of new projects we got going. So, yep, stay tuned. And you'll be seeing something one of these days.
All right. Very good. Very good. And last question. Steve NA5C, he says, does Joe Walsh ever get on the air? And what frequency might he be found on?
You will find Joe mostly on 3870 on AM. And that's where he loves to spend his time with his big broadcast transmitters. Wow. He's really on the road so much now with his new analog man. And the Eagles are in rehearsal getting ready to go out for a 2-year run. So Joe's a pretty busy guy. But when he does get to relax in a little bit, you'll find him on 3870 AM. You see, 3870 to 3890 is a gentleman's agreement decades ago that's where the AMers hang out. So when you're up there roaming around with your sideband rig, why, be a gentleman and let those guys have their fun there. There's lots of other spaces, but the 3870 was the beginning of that window, and the West Coast AMers have been there for many, many, many years, back into the 50s. And still there, and Joe is a very strong operator in the West Coast AMI. And you can check it out. AMI is a wonderful organization. Look them up on Google.
Super. Thanks for the answer there on that, too. Also, I don't know if any of you hosts know the answer to this. For all the talk about the Audible books, which sounds so fantastic, here was a great question from one of the chat room gang here. VE3KNT, he says, any ham books on Audible? Does anybody know without having to go into their system and type it in? Are there any ham radio Audible books?
I am not aware of any. Gordo, are you aware of any Audible books, anything up there?
No, but we'll talk Leo into convincing Audible to put a few books on, huh?
How about you, Gordo?
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Oh, well.
For the future.
Yeah, we certainly have all of our training materials are on CD, but that Audible, maybe they want to take over what we're doing.
Well, you could be part of that anyhow. So sign yourself up. You'd be great at it, too. Add it to your repertoire of fine things that you already do. All right. And then we had a viewer say, Steve, NA5C, he says, Cheryl, how about a Ham Radio Deluxe Version 6 episode on Ham Nation? It's only a suggestion, but I thought maybe a little portion might if you ever want to cover anything like that, that might be good. And I said I would bring that to the folks and see what they thought about that. What do you think about that one, Bob? Is that a possibility?
Everything's possible. It's just timing and getting everybody to do it. So we'll put it on the list. We have lots of things on the list. Thanks a lot. We appreciate everybody giving us some ideas because eventually they will get answered.
And then the next question is W8YXM John made a comment of the equipment on The Last Man Standing that he noticed one of the labels, and I thought it was really kind of cute. He says, I assume the amp is legal. Only the labels say 5,000 watts on them. I thought that was a pretty good catch on his part. But we love the show, The Last Man Standing. I can't wait to see the new version. And Julian, you did such a great job on that. And looks like that should... there's one last question for George. CD6879 Lewis, he says, how about making a software interface for controlling a simple radio like an ICOM IC2200H? Is that something that's doable?
I'm not familiar with the 2200H, so I have no idea on that. But, you know, any of the radios that have COM ports on them, some of them you'll have to use a level shifter interface to get them to RS-232 standard. But just about any of those radios will talk to the software that's out there. We'll have to look further and see what that 22H is. Like I say, I'm not familiar with it, but there's all kinds of options for the radios that do have a COM port.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that, George. Looks like I'm going to run, folks. We'll see you next time on Ham Nation. I'm going to be out there on 3847. I'd like to talk to you. And what is the 40-meter net? I saw some mixed reviews. Usually it's 7268, but you've changed that number. So I'll let you pick it up from here, George. And have a great night, Gordo, Julian, Bob, and Mr. Amadeo. Thanks for joining us on Ham Nation. We really appreciate you being there. Talk to you next time.
The net tonight is going to be on 7.272, I believe I saw. And I don't think there's a 20-meter net tonight. And the Echo Link net is on star, do drop in star, or node number 355-800. And the D-Star net is on reflector 14, module C. 7-3.
Your Alpha Kilo, Whiskey Tango, Hotel
7-3. There we go. All right. I noticed the Collins guys are still going on 3885. You can check that out. That's not a part of Ham Nation, but if you want to listen to some beautiful AM, it's there. So you have all the other frequencies. That's where I'm headed to. Going to see if we can get in with Mike out on the West Coast on 40 meters. Gordo, is everything tuned up there for 40 for you guys?
Everybody else out
we
there
are tuned up. You can hear them in the background.
Watching live on Twitch. This is
they're there. So see you on 7272.
272. Inviting all of you to all join right. us again last week.
Doesn't get any better than that. It's coming from the horse's mouth. And this, in this instance, Mike. All right, guys and girls, thanks a lot for tuning in. And next week, why we will be right here, same time, same place, and we'll just have some more fun then. And lots of nice things coming down the way. We're going to cover a little contest next week that was kind of interesting. I did the contest with some of my 1950-60 gear. That was kind of interesting. And it worked great, let me tell you. So tune in. We're going to have a little bit of that and other things coming down the pike. See you on the air. Get on the air. Have fun. And let everybody know about Ham Nation. And don't forget to watch Tim Allen and all of our ham radio buddies on ABC. 7-3, everybody. This is K9EID.